All right, good morning. It is Friday, May 13th, 2011. We're here in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and we have scheduled today a work session on Keystone Pipeline. It doesn't have a specific case number associated with it, although the case number associated with the siting case was case number PU-06-421. For those who may be attending or listening on the internet, the commission has a number of different types of procedural meetings. This is actually scheduled and noticed as a work session. Work sessions are an opportunity for the commission and staff to talk amongst itself and to then be able to give some direction to staff or to the commission itself on how we might like to proceed with any topic that's before us. They're not typically opportunities for input of any kind, although from time to time we may ask folks who are in the room in attendance a specific question if we have it. But generally speaking, it's an opportunity for the commission to just discuss a matter that may be before it. In this case, the issue that has arisen is with regard to an incident on the Keystone Pipeline, and really more specifically, apparently a pumping station on the Keystone Pipeline that had a spill. And so in any event, this has been put on. I think, Kevin, you were probably the one who requested the work session. In addition to it, we have some paperwork before us. The probably two most pertinent things that we'll be going over are, number one, of course, the siting case itself, which is a very lengthy order. Looking back on it, it reminded me just how lengthy it really was. And then also a memo that Commission General Counsel Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco has written to the Commission regarding basically an outline of options that the Commission might have, a little bit more on the jurisdiction, different types of procedures that the Commission might use going forward. With that, joining me at the table today, and I don't know that I introduced myself either, this is Commission Chairman Tony Clark. Joining me at the table today are my fellow commissioners, Brian Kalk and Kevin Kramer. In addition, we have Patrick Fahn, who's director of our compliance division, and General Counsel Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, who's just briefly stepped out of the room. We have a number of other interested parties in the room today. I don't know that we need to do introductions, but just know that there are a number of folks. With that, I will turn it over to my fellow commissioners for opening comments before we get into the meat of the discussion. Kevin.
Sure. Thanks, Tony. And I did ask to schedule a work session to discuss this, largely because, well, it came upon us, obviously, like incidents like this do very quickly. It is of great interest to the citizens of North Dakota and certainly to the Public Service Commission as a result of that. It also, just giving the timeline and the time frame of all of our busy schedules, I thought it would be best if we could, at least as commissioners, get together, look at the order, discuss what's happening, have Alana do exactly what she did, prepare some options, which I appreciate, Alana, you having done that. As you know, Commissioners Patrick and I did make a trip down to the site of the incident, and certainly could share some observations of that as well. But the purpose of this was not to so much seek information from company or witnesses as it is just to determine what our options are, and then for us to decide what we might want to do in moving forward. I would say that in addition to going down to the site and observing there, we have had some conversations, of course, with interested parties, including landowners in the area, the one eyewitness to the incident. And then also I did make a phone call this morning to Dave Barrett with the Office of Pipeline Safety in Kansas City to make sure that he understood what we were doing, we understand what they're doing as part of their responsibility for pipeline safety, that any, we don't want to duplicate and nor need to duplicate any action, but we do want to be coordinated. So that my specific interest with Mr. Barrett was to understand if they would have yet, or if they have requested the SCADA information, said they have requested that, don't have it yet, because I think it's in terms of some of the potential information that would be helpful to us and that pertains directly to the order. Clearly that does. And by the way, as lengthy as the order is, and it's I think it's 42 pages, and I've read it now a few times in the last couple of days, some of the more specific requirements of the order are compliance with, of course, pipeline safety laws and federal laws. And so it's largely the pipeline safety jurisdiction obviously is largely theirs, but the siting jurisdiction continues to be ours. So at any rate, I'll go into more of some of the specific questions I might have and in the discussion. But thanks to everybody for their hard work in such a short time and a very busy time.
Thanks, Kevin. Brian?
Well, as always, my colleagues set it up pretty good. The only thing I would add is that the commission, we spent a lot of time over the last 2 years about, you know, the call before you dig and the awareness of pipeline safety. This is a different sort of pipeline safety case than we're used to seeing. So it's a very appropriate to have this work session now. This was wasn't scheduled earlier in the week, so I will tell you that at 11:15 I'm off to the Dakota College of Botany to be their commencement speaker. So if we're still rolling at 11:15, I will have to excuse myself. But this is very serious that we get this set up the right way. And I think what Kevin's point was, need to make sure what our role is and what other folks' role is, because there's a lot of jurisdiction that comes into play in a pipeline like this. So yeah. I look forward to the discussion.
Thanks. And I don't think it's going to be a real long meeting,
no,
because it really is just a preliminary discussion amongst commission and staff.
And just what we say when we go to these hearings.
Yeah, I know. It's but we won't be taking any sort of testimony today. So perhaps the best starting point would be for Alana to go over her memo that she has drafted, and we can go from there.
The memo simply outlines the statute, and the siting statute does have specific provisions that contemplate this sort of situation. And so when you have a specific statute, that's the one you follow as opposed to general procedure. So the siting statute does have provisions for consideration of revocation or suspension of a permit. It has provisions for a penalty if certain problems are found under that section. And the memo does have attached the actual statutory provisions. So if certain violations are found, the penalty can be as high as $10,000 per violation per day, up to a maximum of $200,000 for a series of related violations. So the maximum could be higher if there were other violations unrelated. And then we do have procedural rules in the commission that use a form of process called an order to show cause. And so these rules do have the effect of law. And so I do think that the order to show cause process could be used in conjunction with the citing case. And what an order to show cause does is, rather than like staff filing a complaint asserting violations, the order to show cause could be used where the company has the burden of coming in and showing, you know, why we should not suspend or why we should not penalize.
But can I? Yeah,
go ahead. Sure. My question is, I think what we're going to want to do is to provide some sort of venue to get information on the record so that we can act on it. Right now we don't have that.
You would need a formal proceeding for that.
Okay, so if we were to go down the show cause route, does that allow other interested parties an opportunity to put information on the record, or is that specific to the company putting information? The reason I ask is we had the meeting in Ellendale yesterday on a totally separate matter, but we're in the area that the incident happened, and so via electronic communication, we were able to kind of keep in touch with some folks who were eyewitnesses to the event. And I had mentioned to them, look, well, we can't have a public meeting on it because it wouldn't be a notice public meeting. You can drop by our hearing and at the break catch us individually and let us know your concerns. And so a few people took that opportunity. But obviously the information that they have, which in some cases is firsthand, that's not evidence either, but it would be good to be able to get that sort of thing on the record as well.
Well, any proceeding, whether it's show cause, complaint, or investigation, which can be formal or informal, but a formal one mm-hmm. would produce record evidence. So any of those proceedings you would have and you would require record evidence. At some point, you are going to get information on the record by swearing witnesses or by having an affidavit that no one objects to. Submitted into the record. So I think any of the three proceedings would do that. In an investigation, there's no burden because after an investigation, even a formal one, then you conclude, oh, do I want to file a complaint? Do I want to close this? Do I want to issue an order to show cause? On a complaint, which we have one previous example of a citing, potential citing violation where staff did prepare a complaint, ended in a consent order. On the complaint or the order to show cause, it would simply be the difference in burden of proof, but the formal proceeding to obtain evidence would be very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it would just be who's got the burden. And, of course, the Citing Act.
I would guess then, I would assume then that a formal hearing, if that's what is required, would be in the community affected as per the citing, or is that not necessary?
Citing does not require that, but that might be what you would want to do to facilitate these, now that you have knowledge that people in that area actually want to produce evidence and comment and testify. Any of those hearings would also be public. Again, the information produced under oath would be on the record, but it would also be someone could intervene in an order to show cause or in a complaint case. There could be other formal parties in addition. There's no difference in how those are handled. In an investigation, you still would have public, if you held a hearing in an investigation, a public hearing, people could testify on the record. I'm not sure whether people could intervene, but I don't see why not. It's a formal case. And that is certainly an opportunity. So,
in order to put information on the record in a show cause, do you have to be a party to the? Do you have to intervene, or is that something where public testimony is accepted, just
public
as it would be in any?
Would accept it as long as it's sworn,
okay.
Subject to cross examination. Intervening would give a person an opportunity to cross examine, say, a company witness.
Sure.
Or the So, in order to show cause, would be. The company would be the respondent, and then an interested party could petition to intervene in order to have more formal rights. But anyone could speak.
Let me just take a step back, Lana, if I could.
So
the process, would that be something that we know this is my portfolio or Kevin's or who it is, but the portfolio holder would make a motion during one of the meetings, or is it something that we could decide today to go forward with? And then the second part of that is, accidents happen at different levels all the time. And so how do we use a benchmark of, okay, this is something that trips the trigger, if you will, that we do this, or this is just routine? I'm not saying this is routine by any means, but I'm saying that the process of being able to look at our rationale of how we decide that, 1 gallon, 50 gallons, 500 gallons, 5,000 gallons, 1 million gallons, what becomes our matrix there?
Well, I think it's the order itself and whether there's a possibility that there's a violation of it.
That's the first part, yes. I mean, in the previous one example that we had, the violation of the order, because it was moving structures, was very clear.
Okay.
And staff was producing a complaint, like, on its own because it was an obvious violation. And I was going to say, if you go with the order of show cause route, it has to be accompanied with an affidavit from staff or from someone that has knowledge. So already you have to get to those facts and see what you think about them and how severe they are. I think in order to make that decision, you could, if you decided to do something formal today, you would give staff instructions. I shouldn't say you'd decide. You'd give us instruction to prepare paperwork. Then you'd take a formal meeting action to open an formal investigation or issue an order to show cause. If you wanted to have staff do an informal investigation first, I think you could probably give us that direction at a meeting like this. I don't think you need a formal motion to do that.
Let me ask an opinion question. Pat, jump in if you. It's my belief we need to open some type of proceeding. It's a big enough issue where we need to look at it, so which means we need to have an ability to get information on the record. Do you feel like you have enough at this point to move towards show cause, or do you feel like there would be some advantages to simply opening an investigation first so we would have a better sense for how to word that show cause if you're going to move that direction? Because I assume the wording of a show cause has to be something that you're tying to the actual order itself, and are we at a position where we feel like we have enough information to tie that to the order itself or not?
Before I want to know the answer to the information, but before you go there, tying it to order, law, or rule violation.
Okay, got it.
Those are the three.
And that's important,
thank you.
Obviously, because the order is rather specific, but the law is rather broad.
Right.
The other thing is, I mean, as long as, before you answer that, Pat, as long as we're going down that path, I mean, the reason we need to have, I have a bias, and I'll wait for Pat's answer, but I mean, we haven't even talked about injunction or enjoining, because if there's something so severe that this is a line that's planning on going back on, maybe it is by now. So anyway, with that thought, Pat.
As far as if we have enough to, like, proceed on our, like, present evidence to the commission at this point, I don't believe we have enough information for that.
Now, when you say present evidence, are you talking about in the context of a complaint or in the context of a being able to produce a show cause?
Like an affidavit document. To support
right.
a show cause
request.
Right. I think either way, you need to have that evidence for either of those, is my impression anyway. And I don't think we have the evidence we would need to go forward with either of those.
I mean, at this point, we've got a few filings from Keystone, not sworn in any way, some press clippings and some information from some eyewitnesses, but again, none of it really admissible in any sense, right?
You know, my sense of it, and I say I have a bias, it's not a bias as much as it is information and what I've sort of, where I'm leaning, is that we don't have enough information to do either a show cause or a complaint. But we certainly have enough information to request a lot more information. And that's why coordination with Dave Barrett and the folks at Pipeline Safety is critical, and Pat has been in touch with him, and I told Dave that we would be forwarding him everything that we have, including today's memo, and that we would, you know, because the one of the potential violations, or a number of them, would be violations of their laws, which are a condition of our permit. So there's no point in two of us doing the same investigation, although I think they're about as stressed out as we are in terms of staffing and all of that. But this is a priority. So my sense is that we need to do something to empower the staff to get the information. And if that's an informal investigation at this point or a formal investigation, we should talk about what we'd prefer or what would do.
Yeah. I think I would go the route of the formal investigation just because it gives us some opportunity to fill in and complete the record in a way that informal may not. And you're likely going to have to move to a formal anyway
right.
if you run into something that would give the commission enough concern to take action. So I don't see why we'd want to take that extra step. My thought is move to a formal investigation.
Go right to the formal because there's enough information I sense out there that it'll come forward. Pat, how do you gauge going forward? I mean, from what I've read, I get the sense that the problem has been fixed. But, I mean, do you get a sense of comfort going forward that we're not going to have this happen tomorrow, the same type of situation?
Let me answer in a way that might not be exactly how you asked it. But like Commissioner Kramer said, that one of the conditions in our order is that they have to follow comply with the rules and regulations of other agencies that have jurisdiction over this pipeline. And that, to me, in this situation, it looks like we're talking about pipeline safety, Part 195, you know, construction of the pipeline, operation and maintenance of the pipeline, emergency response. If there were any violations or probable violations of Part 195 of the Code of Federal Regulations, then I would certainly have something to go forward with. I don't think I would want to judge at this point whether it appears that this is a serious situation.
Well, I guess what I was thinking is
until I find out more, until I know more of the facts.
The situation that appears that may have caused some of this, there was a lot of things that were done to retrofit other areas, if you will, so this type of thing doesn't happen in other spots. That's what I read.
Yeah, right.
So I guess that, to me, is what I was trying to see, what your opinion of that was, that we have an incident that took place. There was a whole bunch of things done up and down the pipeline to hope that those things don't happen in those areas. to me, that seems
the
like
replacement of that same valve or that same fitting on every one. If it's confined to that and that satisfies, is it safe to keep it going?
Basically? Yeah, that's basically the question. Is my sense is it seems like reasonable to let things keep going. That's the big first question, I think.
I don't think we have enough information to.
I would certainly agree.
Yeah, I mean, part of the investigation would undoubtedly be, have things like this happened in other pumping stations? Right. What's the history of the line itself? Is the standard operating procedure, was it followed in this case or in a way different that was in other cases? But that's what we don't have.
And what we
have anecdotal
with all the anecdotes and the press clippings, we know that this was the 10th one at a pumping station on this line. The other nine are all more minor, but we don't know the variables that might be similar. We don't know what the characteristics of those other nine were, if they were all human error, if they were the same piece of equipment, if there's a design flaw. All of that is going to require a lot more investigation. But those are certainly questions that I have, and I suspect that
Is there a well-defined relationship that we have with regard to PHMSA and who does what in the investigation, or is that something that we have to just continue to work on with them, or is it clearly laid out already?
I think it's fairly clearly laid out. I mean, this pipeline is the jurisdiction of the Office of Pipeline Safety at the federal level. And they also, if they are interested in having the state do some investigation on the pipeline, they would actually have an agreement with us.
Mm-hmm. Which they've offered many times.
Which they've offered in the past, and they haven't offered in this particular instance. It's since it's just recent. But
they prefer during construction, but we just haven't had the
right. So, I mean, that is something that we could explore with the Office of Pipeline Safety and see if they're going to perform an investigation.
I think the goal would be that, I mean, ultimately, they're the expert on pipeline safety, and whatever recommendations they make is going to be incorporated into our record. At the same time, we want to make sure that whatever investigation we're doing can be brought into their record and vice versa. So I think it's really it's just a matter of ensuring that we're continuing to collaborate closely with them so that we have the information we need and they can benefit from any investigation that we do, but without completely duplicating each other's work.
And because this failure was a piece of pipe or a fitting of some type, it's going to be related to that Part 195 Code of Federal Regulations for either construction or operation.
Okay.
And so certainly we are very dependent on the Office of Pipeline Safety's follow through on this. And coordinating with them, I believe we are.
Okay. Now, having said that, Pat, the order, there are so many findings in the order. I mean, apart from the ordering clause itself, findings relative to valves and timing and automated valves versus, human valves and versus, valves that are operated by the dispatchers or the people in the control center. So it's very specific. There are also specific information regarding, flyovers every 2 weeks, all of those sorts of things that are in our order and parts of our specific findings. How will we investigate all of that, or is that stuff that PHMSA will do, and then we'll take that information into our record? I think what's at stake here is not just public safety, but public confidence. And I think that with that in mind, we have to be perhaps even more thorough than some other investigator might be. So, can we get airplane logs, for example, so that the company can demonstrate to us, thus the public, that, yes, they've never missed one of those two-week flyovers, as just one small example of something that's specific in our order?
I believe what the company was doing here and what we found as a finding of fact, the company was describing their requirements under this Part 195 Code of Federal Regulations. And so all those records and all that record keeping and all the requirements for plans for operating and maintaining the pipeline and construction of the pipeline, all the record keeping falls under that Part 195. Now, to the extent that they told us something different from what may be under Part 1 or required by Part 195 or their manuals, mm-hmm. to the extent they told us something different here, we would want to look into that. We would want to check that out.
Sure.
But most of the things that you're talking about the company describing what they're required to do in Part 195.
But that may lay out almost like what's our data request going to be. I mean, it could be this big and be very small again. So maybe come out with some questions that you think that we should be asking. It may be nice to review those a little bit before we send them over too. Well, and there also probably needs to be some urgency on this as well. I mean, we got so much going on, but this will probably float to the top pretty quick.
Well, there was a lot of urgency in getting the pipeline built and operational. There should be twice as much urgency in making sure it's safe after this. I think also, Brian's point is right, but I think it gets back to Tony's. To the degree that PHMSA is being as thorough as we are hoping they are, all this information is going to be provided. So, I think the relationship with us and PHMSA is what's critical.
I think so, too.
Right. Well, Ilana, did you have something you
wanted to ask if you wanted to have a special meeting noticed, like right now, 15 mm-hmm. minutes or something, to open an investigation? Because that's simply just a motion.
Sure.
Just need a motion and a case number, basically.
Yeah, I think we should.
And I can just step out for 2 seconds and ask
them. Let's do that.
Yeah.
To do that.
11 o'clock.
I think that makes sense. And then I would I'd recommend in follow-up that we put this as just a regular agenda item for discussion on our admin portions of the agenda. I mean, do we want to do it every meeting or say once a month or?
Well, let's start with every meeting.
Okay.
And maybe
it's every 2 weeks. So.
And maybe in a month it's over.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be back in a minute.
Very
started.
Good.
Thank you, Alana.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Is there other discussion we want to do before? What we can do is we can close the work session, come back at 11, and hold a special meeting for voting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for those who are listening in or maybe in the audience, I don't anticipate there's a lot of discussion that will probably take place at that. That really is just a legal requirement that we notice the meeting and vote on it. Most of the discussion will be done through here.
I think that seems like an appropriate act.
Is there anything else for the good of the order? Kevin, Brian, Pat?
I just thought of one other thing. I mean, certainly we'll be interested in the requirements of the Department of Health.
Right.
And how the company is.
The findings that they.
Right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. I mean.
Yeah, ultimately environmental.
That's right.
Regulation is under their authority, and so we should incorporate their findings as well.
Well, and the order is all other agencies with jurisdiction,
all other
so
agencies, yep.
Clearly there.
We have to think some more through the agency jurisdictions and see if there are others that we need to follow up with.
Brian, one of the things I thought of you a lot on the cleanup side and the emergency response side of it, and it was interesting because the two guys yesterday, of course, they're also rural firemen. And if you had ridden out with Pat and I those 11 miles on that gravel road from Highway 11, you'd have wondered if an emergency responder could get there in several conditions. And that's after the road's been tremendously improved by the company itself. Obviously, they need to be able to get a lot of stuff there. That thought, as we were sort of making our way through water, was paramount. I was thinking, what if a farmer was out here planting his crop at this time, and you know, God forbid something happened. It was another factor that, I kept thinking of. Brian would be asking this question if he was here right now.
Got to have the emergency response plans at work.
Well, you know, and it's such a tough one because, on the one hand, you know, one of the things that really I was impressed with was that this Bob Banderet, who is, you know, was the eyewitness, when he saw it, he knew it was wrong. He knew where he had the phone number. He knew who to call, and there was a person on the other end. And you know, that speaks volumes to both the preparation that the company did for the community and then the community's response to it. I mean, I was pretty impressed with that, as much as I was with the alarms and the sensors and all of that. But at the same time, as we know, local emergency managers aren't, or first responders aren't necessarily equipped to deal with this high level of hazardous material situations. In fact, they're instructed not to. And I thought, boy, I don't know. I think you'd have to, you know, in some situations. So I think we've got some things to work through even as we move forward. I think we have a lot of things to work through as we move forward from this example, frankly, and future orders and making sure that there's plenty of both public safety and public confidence.
Right. Okay, so we're set for 11 o'clock. Is that right?
We're trying to get set, yes. We're going to get it on, get a meeting notice out as soon as we can. A motion, Pat and I just concluded, in this case, not opening a new docket. Is that okay with you?
That's
fine.
It's fine. I think that's where it belongs. I think it maintains the consistency of
okay. And did you need to talk at all about injunction or anything?
I don't think so. I just don't think we have what it would take to do that. I don't even have, I mean, I don't even have an inclination of that. So.
Okay, well, let's close the work session now. We'll plan to come back at 11 a.m. for a formal special meeting to take up a voting item. Thank you.